Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a Wednesday afternoon edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by co-worker Dan Favalli of Hardwood Knox and Bleacher Report. Dan, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I am doing well. Thanks for having me as always. I think this is the first time that I'm on since you've joined Blue Wire.
I believe that is the case. Good times, man. This is cool. And we keep adding to the team. We got American Prodigy season 2 coming down the pike in not too long. So
that's gonna be so good. Anything Ken Griffey is bound to be so good.
Oh no, I'm absolutely here for it. And it's topical now because Griffey now a senior advisor. Whatever made up position that Major League Baseball just created for him, I'm still okay with it.
I'm fine with anything Griffey. If he could teach any of the young players that swing of his, that's like the last time I remember being really interested in baseball was when Griffey was. He's probably on the Reds at that point, so I shouldn't say Pete Griffey, but still.
Well, let me tell you, there's only a third of the league trying to win a championship in 2021. If you're trying to get back into baseball, I'll let you know. Like, it's a very healthy league where everything is great.
I can't do baseball, flat out. Playoffs and stuff, because I do social media, like, yeah, I can try and follow it. But for the past, I don't know, like 15 years, I've become very disenchanted with. I can't sit still and watch baseball for some reason.
Interesting. Here's the here. Can I tell you how to the secret to watching baseball?
I'm ready.
Okay, so you got to get rid of your phone. Step one, phone's got to go. Step two,
I think we've already lost.
Okay.
Here,
so. Step two, score sheet. If you are using a scorebook, baseball flies by, and it's fun. I like the enjoyment I get out of filling out a score sheet while watching baseball games. 10 out of 10. It's so much better because one of the things I like, basketball is my thing, but like, it is difficult sometimes to take notes on basketball games. Football is the easiest, maybe baseball is the easiest actually. But basketball, hockey too, it's really hard because it's really fast and you're trying to figure out who did what and you want to like go back and like, there's so many different rotations I want to go back on. And I'm like, oh, what did they do there? Who was that? Was he open in the corner? And it's very annoying sometimes where I'm like, I can't do that. Like, it's going to take me 4.5 hours if I want to get every little note down that I want to make in these games. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, you have to pick your spots in basketball.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Maybe I should give it another shot at some point. I think part of the reason is that's not baseball's fault, but covering the NBA full time has become very much a year round thing. And there's also like a level of being so overexposed to sports that sometimes I feel like if I'm watching other sports, it feels like I'm working, as stupid as that sounds, because I know everyone, we do cover a game for a living, but I think I do get sports fatigue sometimes working, having worked so long in it.
Well, this is why I don't have close friends and date sports fans or like diehard sports. I can't do it. Like when I'm done with my work and I'm done with watching and doing what I need to do, I'm like, let's do anything else. Like, let's talk about anything else. Let's do anything else. Like my biggest pet peeve is like when I tell people what I do and stuff like that, and then they find out and they're excited, and like the internal dread that I have of them getting excited about asking me about LeBron James is, it's not fair to them, obviously, because they're just looking to connect. And in my head, I'm like, I would love to do anything else other than you tell me why LeBron's a fraud for the next 50 minutes. Like, I can't do it. Like, I hate it so much. I really do. I just don't like talking sports with casual sports fans. It doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I try to avoid telling people what I do at all costs. Yeah. It came out of a barbershop once, and that was a disaster. Mm-hmm. Just because then you have other people chiming in. So you got to try and hide it wherever you can. I don't mean to complain about what we do.
We're not complaining, but it's just like the same thing when you're an accountant and you come home and you don't want to, I'm sure, not to speak for all accountants, that you don't want to just talk about it all night. Like, you're like, no, that was what I did all day. That's what I do most of the week. Like, I'd rather talk about literally anything else.
No, I totally hear that.
Well, that naturally brings us to the NBA, a sport that you and I don't think about enough, don't talk about enough, don't write about enough, don't podcast enough about, but I think we should, because, you know, there's a lot of basketball happening. Dan, who have you been watching the most this past week?
I was supposed to do a big deep dive for Bleacher Report into the Toronto Raptors, so I was watching a lot of them, and then that got kiboshed in favor of a, surprise, surprise, more national angle that we were tackling. So I've been watching a lot of Raptors, and they were interesting because I think people have this impression that they and Pascal Siakam are just bad now because of how they started the season and how they ended that Celtics series. And I am kind of confident in saying that I think the Raptors have turned a corner and that they're back.
Pascal Siakam, Kyle Lowry staying put.
I do think he'll stay put. I did see that his house in Toronto went up for sale, so maybe this take ages extremely poorly. But aside from Siakam shooting, which has been not great this season, he's shooting like 25% on wide open threes. This is a team that can do a lot of stuff. They still have the same concerns. For me personally, it's, do they have like someone else who can, or anyone who can put consistent half court pressure on the rim? But I think they're a really good team. The defense seems to start, seems like it's starting to perk up, and they're a little bit deeper. What's that?
They're playing 4-on-5 a lot because, let me check my notes here. They don't have a quality center.
Yeah, and they don't want to play Siakam at center. And then when you go with, you know, my favorite front court pairing is actually Siakam and Boucher.
I knew.
They can't get a rebound. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's tough. And the bigger thing for them is OG is actually probably their, you know, if you have a Siakam OG front court, like OG is going to be the better rebounder in those situations, and he's injured at the moment. But they feel, I guess the best way to put it is, where people view it as like, well, they should just trade Kyle Lowry and sort of start over. I actually think they're closer to something special, where if you were to make a major move at the deadline, I would do so as a buyer rather than a seller if I were them, if that makes any sense.
Also, they don't have any depth. Like, they don't really have that is something I worry about with them, is there's not really a lot to trade. They're already thin in the rotation as is, playing seven deep. Terrence Davis in and out, Thomas.
Redacted, like, as he's been called.
Exactly. Like, you just look at it and you're like, oh, shit. Like, they're very, very limited, and they rely so much on their starting five. And they need bodies. And trading Lowry, like, they would tumble, and they're clawing back into that eighth seed. They'll probably flirt around the play-in game, stuff like that. But I don't know. I think a lot of it just comes down to OG's continued development. I know he's injured right now, but where are we at in the OG ascent in Toronto?
He's, I think, the best version of the type of player that he's been billed as, where it's a 3-and-D guy who can be locked down on the ball defensively. He's hitting, I think, over 43% of his threes this year, and he can still really attack closeouts on drives. The next element of his game that I actually don't think they've explored enough this season is just more self-creation, and I don't think he needs to be Fred VanVleet or Kyle Lowry. He doesn't even need to be Pascal Siakam, but feature him in the post a little bit more, let him get an ISO a little bit more. There was a game against the Pacers this season where he just absolutely abused Sabonis, who's not a great defender, but he's not a slight human either. And OG Anunoby just powered through him both from face-ups and in the post. And I would like to see them explore that more because, as you sort of mentioned, he's their swing piece for the future. That's if you want to be something special now or down the line, he's just the best vessel through which to do it because you kind of know who everyone else is. There's still that element a little bit of unknownness with Siakam, but I think you're always going to look at him and be like, well, I wish he had a tighter handle and was a little bit more closer to a number one option than he actually is. So can OG Anunoby sort of be a facsimile of a number two, where you have two number two guys in Siakam and Anunoby on they could be number twos on a title contender. And what does that amount to? And so I think this season has been very encouraging. The extension he signed, I think, is going to end up being a bargain for Toronto. But I do think kind of how they've plumbed the depths of Pascal Siakam's offensive game, I'd like to see them do a little bit more with OG Anunoby moving forward once he's healthy.
But the thing is, if you want them to be a buyer, he's the one who has to go. Like, he is the one who has to be moved.
The weird thing is that he kind of can't because of the extension he signed and like the poison pill provision. I think he's cheap enough to where like you can make it work in complicated fashion. But if you were going to get a Bradley Beal, yes, I would trade OG Anunoby in a heartbeat. But like, it has to be that level of player because I do think
can I give you a different option here?
Please don't say Victor Oladipo.
Oh, no, I would never. Poor Victor Oladipo. As a yearly defender of the Indiana Pacers and what Victor Oladipo was in that Cavs series, seeing this is tough for me, but no, this is the answer for me. OG for Michael Porter Jr.
Again, there'd have to be other moving parts but that is very interesting.
I would love to see Porter Jr. get put in the Toronto incubator, get away from Denver, get away from Jokic. You give Denver the kind of perimeter defender they are lacking sorely this year, under team control. He can build. He's okay playing behind Jokic and Murray in the rotation. He's okay not torpedoing the offense. Still a lot of high upside, like you said. Number two, number three on a contender. Kind of exactly what Denver needs. Not somebody who thinks, and maybe rightfully so down the line, they can be a number one. It's almost like I just would love to see Toronto place Michael Porter Jr. in their incubator and be like, hey, we're going to give you every opportunity to be the number one. And then you put Kyle Lowry maybe in OG in Denver, and that is your trade. Would you do something like that?
I might consider it. I just like it feels you're still kind of leaning into the long term there, and so I wonder what your net gain ends up being. If it's a situation where you're keeping Lowry and VanVleet and Siakam, and you're sort of subbing out Davis for Michael Porter Jr., that gets a lot more interesting to me. But if you are going to skew towards the long term, I think you could argue that OG is going to be an easier fit on whatever iteration of a roster that you come up with. And if you're catering to the big picture, you don't know what type of roster you're necessarily going to come up with. Where Porter Jr., I think eventually he's going to get to the point where he wants a certain number of touches. You're also going to have to pay him, and there's still the element of unknownness with his injury history specifically, and then what he's going to do on defense. You've already got OG Anunoby on what is going to be a very good contract at 4 years and $72 million. And Michael Porter Jr. extension eligible this year. I don't know what he ends up getting, but if he stays healthy, he might wind up costing more than OG. And I don't know that he's by far and away the better player, certainly a higher ceiling. But I have not given any thought to that type of like a swap out. And I have to admit it is fascinating to contemplate. If you told me that Toronto keeps it the rest of its other core intact, like Lowry, VanVleet, and Siakam stick around, and it's sort of the OG for Michael Porter Jr. swap, that is absolutely fascinating.
I think it just helps solve a lot of problems for both teams in the near and long term, potentially.
It definitely helps Denver because they don't need Michael Porter Jr.
No.
Like, they don't. He's a luxury for them.
Yes. I don't even know if he's a luxury at this point.
He's playing pretty poor. He's shooting pretty poorly at the moment. Yeah. But, like, he can play the position that's of most need for them, but he doesn't actually do what they need that position to do, and OG Anunoby does.
Exactly. There you go. Let's do it. Make it happen. How do you fix the Nets defense, Dan?
I don't think you can. But
okay.
I mean, you don't have the – I don't know what the move is, what the player out there that helps. They need a PJ Tucker type in the sense that they need someone who's physical up front and can really move. But they also need someone who can help them on the defensive glass. And we've seen it when they downsize with Jeff Green or even a Kevin Durant at the five. Like, those lineups just are not grabbing rebounds. So, and if you have Tucker at center, you're not necessarily going to do that either. Can you get a Thaddeus Young? Might be someone. Not even the greatest rebounder, as I mentioned him. I thought before he got injured, I don't know if they had the asset equity to get him, because I think Orlando would have to be interested in Spencer Dinwiddie and his bird rights, but Aaron Gordon would have been great for this roster. But you need like that 4-5 type who, if he's not going to help you on the glass, like at least give you someone who can switch across some wing positions, because you don't want Bruce Brown and Kevin Durant just to be your best wing defenders. That's not, well,
Bruce,
you know,
Brown,
that's not,
is he even in the rotation right now? He's gotten some.
He played the other night. I mean, okay. His minutes wax and wane. And
yeah.
When, you know, his shooting's a liability, which really shouldn't matter on a roster like this. But if you have so many ball dominant guys, you do want those who can stroke the three off the catch. So they need that type of a defender. And I don't think, you know, ideally you would get like a lockdown stopper on the perimeter. They're just not going to get that because they don't have the asset equity. But if they can get someone who can help them on the defensive glass and just switch across, you know, even the 3-4 spots, like I don't mind Jeff Green going up against centers, and then DeAndre Jordan will be mismatched off the court. So ideally you'd be looking at an Aaron Gordon or a Thaddeus Young type player, but I do think you can go lower lift there, and you have to go lower lift. I just don't you know, PJ Tucker might be the ceiling on their type of acquisition that's left. And at the same time, it's like, well, why would Houston give Brooklyn PJ Tucker after giving them James Harden already? So I don't know what the answer is, and I don't, this season specifically, I don't think that there is one.
Yeah, I don't. So here's the thing about the answer. It depends on like what you are worried about, because like the Nets are playing down to their competition. Like, they really don't get up for games like last night where they lost to the Pistons. But the Pistons are playing pretty solid. Like, I saw a stat that was kind of crazy. Is the Pistons, are their 6 wins this season are all against playoff teams. They get up for big games. It's kind of the opposite with them. But the Nets are 7-1 against the best teams in basketball this year. They get up for the good teams. They're going to get up for the good teams in the playoffs. The Nets are going to ease their way. Like, I am so unconcerned about the Nets getting out of the East. The East, like, the number 3 seeds, I think 14-12 at the moment. The Nets are going to steamroll the East. Like, that, it's over. Like, I don't understand why we overthink this. Like, no one's stopping them in a 7-game series. If they're fine, the big 3 are fine. Like, they are steamrolling the East. Now, do they have a shot at the Lakers or the Clippers? No. Not at all. There's not, like you said, a defensive fix there that will get them in a position to take the Lakers or the Clippers down to 7-game series. But I do think they have enough, and this 3, with 3 of the top 15 players in basketball, they are going to just ease their way through the East. I am not concerned. So when I see this, I'm like, nope, they get it for the teams they're supposed to. They'll struggle through the regular season, and then come playoff time, we're going to be like, oh, right, this is insanity. They're going to give up a bunch of points, but they're also going to score more points than the opposition 4 times out of 7. And that's it. It's just, why do we do this? I don't know why we do this.
I mostly agree with you. I just don't think that even if Harden, Durant, and Kyrie Irving are playing at their peak, that they're necessarily a guarantee to walk out of the Eastern Conference.
Oh, guaranteed. It's a guarantee. It's a guarantee, dude. Kevin Durant's out of his mind this year. Kyrie's not playing well.
He is, but I still think Milwaukee and Philly are 2 teams that could get them.
We'll get into Philly. Are you ready to talk about Philly?
I'm ready to talk about Philly.
Okay, because Joel Embiid, great season. Seth Curry having like just a 50-50-100 season, which is pretty bonkers too. But like, Philly's not winning the East.
Why?
Like, they're not stopping the Nets in a 7-game series. It's just not happening. How does this work? How did the Sixers score enough to handle the Nets in a 7-game series? How?
Look at the way Tobias Harris is playing. Seth Curry.
Like, Tobias has to be
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends whose 4-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a 4-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
The LA Clippers, Tobias, for a 7-game series.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been that basically all season. He's been even better when you look at his shooting numbers. Mm-hmm. And I think, look, Seth Curry does things to the floor. And he's mm-hmm. not even – Seth Curry hasn't really played that well by his standards since coming back from COVID. And so if – I think – one for me with Philly, the roster makes a lot more sense. We can't underestimate that. But defensively, they might be the team that just matches up the best against the Nets, because you have Ben Simmons, who you can just throw on – basically any one of those three guys. You have Danny Green, who I probably wouldn't mind. If I'm them, I throw Danny Green on Kyrie Irving, and he probably at least can perhaps hold his own. And then you just have Embiid, who you don't want him as the primary defender on a Kevin Durant if they go super small. At the same time,
that's what they'll do, right? Kevin Durant will play the five for the majority of those minutes.
But, I mean, they're going to risk just getting killed. Do you want Kevin Durant defending Joel Embiid in the post or even off face-ups? Mm. He's just so physical, and Durant is so slight. Maybe you throw James Harden on Embiid at that point just because he's more physical, but I don't know how much that helps you. And with the way Embiid has been playing, and also just defensively, the thing I've noticed about the Sixers is it feels like Embiid is being a little bit more aggressive. So if he's coming out a little further, he might actually be more equipped to go after a Kevin Durant. I don't think it's a good matchup for him. I want to make that clear. But I do think because of Ben Simmons and then having Danny Green, maybe their team – they also have Matisse Thybulle if they want to play him, by the way, which could really help defensively if they can survive his poor shooting. So that's the team I look at, along with Milwaukee, that I think could actually slow down this Nets offense enough insofar as that's even possible. I want to make that clear to make – even with those three playing at their peak, any 7-game set, really difficult for Brooklyn to win. And the flip side of anything is they're going to give up just as many points as they put up in Brooklyn. So I don't think they're as big of a sure thing as people believe. Perhaps if they make a defensive addition close to the trade deadline.
Like a PJ Tucker possible. Buyout seems to solve a lot of this.
But like, is Trevor Ariza going to make you feel that much better about the Nets?
No. PJ Tucker would, though.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't. I mean, PJ Tucker's not playing well at the moment. He's shooting like -5% from three over the past couple weeks or something like that.
If he's closing over Jeff Green, like, I don't think any of that. Like, I think it's okay.
How do you get your path to PJ Tucker feels fuzzy because the Rockets control so many of your picks that, and I don't think they control this season. I've lost track of that, but I don't think they're going to want to help the Nets out in any fashion. So they're not buying out Tucker either. Like, he will get moved somewhere. So I think he's almost off limits by virtue of the team that sort of has him right now. Mm.
So it sounds like you're a bigger believer in Philly than Utah.
Which is, you are correct. And it's also wild just based off, you know, when we recorded probably a podcast around this time last year, I think both of us were just out on Philly because the roster made no sense. But the way Embiid's playing has been a big part of that for me. And then I mentioned Tobias Harris before. With Utah, I want to make it clear I don't want to disrespect them because they might be the best regular season team in the NBA.
Yeah.
They have, you know, is there a roster that has more really good NBA players, like 1 through 9? I don't know that
there
is.
They're like super Pacers.
Right. And look, the shot creation stuff that used to be a problem in the playoffs, it's just not anymore because even Bojan Bogdanovic is perking up. Mike Conley's dealing with a hamstring injury, but he's played better this year. And then Jordan Clarkson has just been, you know, people were hating on that contract, and I thought it was even a little much for him. But yeah, blowing the doors off on offense. The thing for me is they are so good defensively, and they're even winning the minutes without Gobert right now, though they are allowing parades towards the basket.
Yeah.
If you go up against the Clippers, if you go up against the Lakers, who is the wing?
Yeah, they don't have it.
Royce O'Neal is the answer, and he's just a little too small. People bring up how Joe Ingles has defended Paul George well in the past. That was a really long time ago at this point. He's slower now, and that's only one, like, answer. If you're facing the Clippers, there's still Kawhi. If you're facing the Lakers and you have to choose between – I don't think they have anyone who can match up well with Davis or LeBron, but let's just say you can limit one of them. Then there's the other one. They match up better against teams, I think, where there are star guards, where O'Neal can get after, like a Phoenix might be a team that they would – have a better chance again. So they might, if you can get PJ Tucker on Utah, if you can get Thaddeus Young on Utah, they seem like they're that type of player away from
Aaron
being.
Aaron Gordon would actually fit really well there.
Yeah, I've tried to get him there, but they just don't, unless you're trading Joe Ingles or.
Yeah, why not? This is another thing. I'm writing about this week. So spoiler alert, I'm doing a big thing on the Jazz where it's like they're forcing the Jazz front office hand where it's like they are so good now. They are the number one team in the West that cannot win a title. Like, that is something that's got to be, like, they have to look at it this way of, like, the way we're constructed is we can win a shit ton of regular season games, but we are not, if we finish number 2 in the West, there is no path to them making the finals. Like, there's no path to them beating the Clippers and the Lakers. Like, that is not happening. That is not a thing. I don't even think Jazz fans, the most optimistic ones, would bet on them to get through that gauntlet. But the way around it is you have to sell high on these role players that are playing out of their mind, like the O'Neals, the Ingles. Like, it's going to hurt to trade one of these guys. But, like, to give, you can't give up Conley, you can't give up Mitchell, and you can't give up Gobert. Everyone else should be on the table this year because you don't know that next year everything is going to click this much. Conley could fall off a cliff. Guess what? We already saw what happened off the court with Gobert and Mitchell. That was almost beyond repair. And now they're playing well. That could just come up really quickly next year too. They should be
right.
There should be a sense of urgency in Utah so strong that they're like, how do we get Bradley Beal? How do we do whatever? Like, whatever you have to do to add someone on the wing, like the problem that we just both looked at is like, there's no path. So like, you were right there. Go for it. Do whatever you can for Aaron Gordon or whoever it is. But you just standing pat and being like, well, we have our eight guys and we believe and blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, guess what? You just torpedoed your season. Like, you had this great thing and you could have been a champion, but you decided to be a great regular season team. Like, we're going to learn a lot about the Jazz whether or not they believe that they're the Pittsburgh Pirates of basketball or they're the New York Yankees. Which one do you want to be?
Right. And I would argue very heavily that they just don't have the assets to do a Bradley Beal level trade, but Gordon
well,
is the name.
Say, I was just throwing out names. Like, you need to go after guys like that. You need to take a big swing.
If he's going to be fine after he comes back from his injury, I think he's out for another month or something, if I'm not mistaken. I think people could, you know, there is a path where if you were able to do favors, George Niang, and then Azubuike plus picks, I think that gets you Gordon. But what you already mentioned is they have so many good players. Like, then there's no easy like yank from the closing lineup, because if you have Aaron Gordon, he should close because he's going to be defending some of the best players. And so you should be more open to giving up. You know, I wouldn't do it for PJ Tucker because he's so old. I wouldn't do it probably for Thaddeus Young either, because he's been pretty good on the short roll offensively this year, but just next to Gobert, that gets iffy. Gordon's a better shooter than him. You have the luxury of, if you want to, you know, I don't know that I would give up Bojan Bogdanovic just for Aaron Gordon, but if it's part of the package, you could consider it. Jordan Clarkson even. And I think they have all these shot creators now. I guess Mike Conley's free agency adds if you don't know he's going to come back, then you don't want to give up one of your shot creators. But Mike Conley's on the backside of his career, has never been a guy that wants to seem like to jump around. You're going to get him back if you want him. So I think you do have the luxury of moving an Ingles, a Clarkson, or a Bogdanovic, whether it's, you know, for one player or part of a bigger deal. If you can get an Aaron Gordon without giving up, let's say, your top six players or top seven, top six. So I would say Conley, Gobert, Bogey, Clarkson, Ingles, and O'Neal, and Mitchell. So top seven. If you can do it, then yeah, absolutely do it. But someone's still going to have to sit during those closing units if you want an Aaron Gordon to play. And that's also what's tough about Utah on the buyout market is, why would let's say PJ Tucker or Trevor Ariza gets bought out, they're not going to be guaranteed a spot in the closing unit in Utah. And so that's why they're probably not going to be this buyout destination either. So if you have a chance to get that impact defender, and maybe they don't view Aaron Gordon as it, I think that's fair, but they don't need someone to protect the rim because they have Gobert. They need someone to go after fours and threes, basically. And Aaron Gordon is well equipped to do that. And maybe this is, maybe you can strike now almost while he's injured, because that might lower the cost and he's going to be a free agent after next year. But that's the name I've had circled for them for quite some time. I just don't know how his injury changes the complexion of that.
Yeah. And then my favorite idea, and this kind of leads into some Spursy stuff. I mean, DeRozan's playing very analytics-friendly basketball this year, Dan. What if you throw DeRozan in the mix?
For in Utah?
Yeah.
How does that help Utah, though?
I think it helps in the closing moments where it's like they have different guys that they can go to, where Donovan Mitchell is not required to do everything and that everyone looks at Donovan Mitchell because he's the only one who can create his own shot. I think it takes a lot of the pressure off Conley too. The cutting and the passing, like, it would hurt the defense, but if you close with Royce at the four and or Ingles, Gobert, DeRozan, Conley, but you could also pull Conley for Bojan. In situations, like, I don't think DeRozan would cost that much. He's on the last year of his contract too. I mean, technically you could just do DeRozan for Conley and just bet on the upside there. I don't know. That was something I was just thinking about, of like, who is another name that would make somewhat sense over there. I would not hate DeRozan taking a flyer and just taking a shot on DeRozan because of how well he's playing this year.
He's playing well, but part of why he's playing so well is that the Spurs have him defending a lot of fours, which if you're the Jazz, you would need to have the luxury of doing. And I don't think, you know, you're talking about the value he'd add on offense. I just don't think that's going to be the issue for them. It's going to be defensively, and he doesn't move the needle there at all. And I think you could argue that Conley has been just as good, if not better, than him this year. A team like Toronto might need what DeRozan brings at this point, more so than Utah. I think they need to skew heavily towards defense if they're going to do anything. I mean, you know, they should really be calling the Pistons and seeing what it takes to get Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, that's another
at this
one.
Point.
Yeah. Does Lonzo Ball make any sense there?
In Utah?
Yeah.
I don't think so, because he's really good defensively, but he's not like a great one-on-one defender. And even though he's 6'6", you don't want him going up against like threes and small ball fours. I imagine him going up, you know, having to defend check LeBron James or Kawhi. It just wouldn't work.
Yeah. Maybe
I thought about Josh Hart for them too,
yeah.
But he's also smaller. He has defended some fours, but again, in the context of defending Kawhi or LeBron or even Anthony Davis, like it's not about stopping them. It's about having a viable body to go up against them.
The Heat have won 3 straight, 10-14, I believe, as of this recording. Do you think the Miami Heat can get back into the swing of things and back into contention in the East?
I do. I don't know how much I buy into those 3 games being a reason why. They beat the Knicks twice and the Wizards, which is just, you know, I know the Knicks were better than expected, but that's still a big whatever to me.
Oh, can I do a 20-second part on the Knicks real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Derrick Rose and Emmanuel Quickley going really well. The people who are freaking out about the Derrick Rose
they've played 1 game together, though, Chase.
No. What I'm saying is, like, the mindset. Did you read the quotes from Derrick Rose and how Tibbs is going to use them?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
He wants to be a mentor for
not
the younger
a mentor.
Guys.
They were playing him together last night. I watched this game this morning. They were playing him together. Rose, I don't think has it, like, he has so much self-awareness at this point of who he is as a basketball player. He has no interest in hurting Quickley's minutes or time. People who are worried about Quickley and like what this means, I'm like, I don't think that's going to go this way at all. I think it's just going the opposite way. I think this is actually going to be pretty great for Emmanuel Quickley. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, I don't even want to get into the Derrick Rose trade. That was just, I think it's innocuous on its face if you end up moving Elfrid Payton. That's just where I'm at. I don't think it really helps or hurts them. As a Frank Ntilikina truther, I would argue, because he's not
Frank Ntilikina truther in 2021. But I love it. Oh, damn.
I hope he ends up somewhere else. I think he's still going to be good. But
I would take him in Atlanta because Chris Dunn has played exactly, let me check my notes here, 0 minutes.
Well, Atlanta might even need Elfrid Payton because Rondo has been pretty bad for them.
No, I don't want more of those. I don't want more Rondos. I don't want bad Rondo. What? No. Don't give me Rondo.
I don't understand why Atlanta
Rondo.
Didn't. Okay, here's the scenario, though. Would you have rather them have given Rondo the contract that he has or just claimed Elfrid Payton when the Knicks waived him because they had all that cap space? You would have just had him
neither?
On your deal. Well, neither, but if you had to have Rondo for 2 years or Elfrid Payton for 1, it seems like a pretty easy
decision. Oh, yeah,
decision.
Payton for 1, yeah. Well, then again, the one thing about Rondo is, like, I don't know what he's doing with Trey behind the scenes. Like, I don't know if he's helping, how much he's helping Trey and Bojan and Bogdan and Herter and I don't know. And I really don't know. Like, I don't know because he's so much of a coach that I don't know what he's like behind the scenes, I guess. That's my one caveat.
Atlanta's also just a big incomplete at this point because of all the injuries that they've had. Like you said, Dunn hasn't even played for them. But what was that? Oh, we were talking about the Heat.
Yeah, sorry.
Something still feels off with them. And I think, look, they'll be fine because Jimmy Butler is going to play better. I'm curious to see whether they stick with Tyler Hero coming off the bench because he's been lights out the past 3 games since moving him from the starting lineup to the bench. How does Goran Dragic return from that ankle injury change that? They're missing Avery Bradley for the next month with a calf strain. They've used 16 different starting lineups this year, which is just a boatload given how early we are into the season. But there still are bright spots. Tyler Hero's finishing better. Bam Adebayo shooting 47% on long mid-range attempts, so he counts as a floor spacer now. What feels off about them, aside from, yeah, there's rebounding issues, I think you could probably argue that their three-point defense has not been the greatest either. I don't want to say this guy ends up being the missing piece, but this feels like the void on their team is that I don't know that letting Jake Crowder walk was a good decision for them, and they weren't playing Mo Harkless really before he got injured. Now you just don't have that dynamic four option, and it seems like even if Jay Crowder wanted a multi-year deal, that always would have been a guy that you could move later if you wanted the cap space. And I think that's what comes back to bite them. And that's just assuming that Dragic stays healthy, that Jimmy Butler sort of normalizes his performance, that Tyler Hero's shooting picks up like it has. And those are still, I would say, at least a couple of those, particularly Dragic, like those are legitimate question marks, but you've had to try out, you know, when you look at their power forward rotation, like, yeah, cool. Casey Akpala is kind of fun on defense, but what is he giving you consistently offensively? So I don't know. I feel like that's going to prohibit them from being at the same level, even if they do peak this season, from where they were at last year, unless they make some sort of a move at the trade deadline, which again is always possible, but they're also in this weird spot where, like, yeah, you have Tyler Hero, but it seems like they only would move him in a very specific trade, which there's one player that might qualify there in Bradley Beal. It's, do they sort of have that medium-sized move in them to do something? And the answer to me is I honestly don't know. But I would say that relative to where they finished last season, it feels like even if they are going to be fine this year, their peak is going to be substantially lower.
Interesting. I think they're going to do something. The Heat have been too quiet. I think they're going to do something. The Spurs, like we mentioned a little bit, 14-11. Aldridge and DeRozan are shooting threes. DeRozan's passing's really good this year. DeJounte Murray is becoming... Where do you think DeJounte Murray falls in the NBA hierarchy right now in terms of league guards and lead ball handlers? Where does he fall?
That's such a tough question. Is he, like, where you're trying to say he's like top, what, 30 now among guards or something?
Yeah, is he top 30? Maybe top 25?
He might be close. I mean, he definitely looks a lot more confident and composed on offense to me, and that's something that's huge. I also think that he and their guards in general have done an excellent job of pushing the pace after defensive rebounds. So he definitely feels more plug and play, which is good for the Spurs because his type of game felt like it wasn't very scalable across all these different lineups. He's still just a tough player to figure out for me because I don't know that his perimeter volume is there just yet, and it's, you know, he's shooting 36%-ish on threes over the past 10 games. Can he sort of up that, though? And that's still going to be the long-term swing piece for him because there are still awkward lineups offensively when he's on the floor. But I do agree with you. I guess he's difficult to place for me, but in a good way.
He also just rips the fucking ball out of the guy's hands in amazing ways. Like, he's my favorite person to watch on defense, I think, in the NBA. Like, he is just mean. Keldon Johnson, though, did you see this coming? What is Keldon Johnson? Like, some of the young guys in San Antonio, like, I was so high on Lonnie, and now I'm pretty low on Lonnie, and I was so high on Derek White, and now I don't really know what Derek White is. And now, their guards and wings, it's almost impossible for me to figure out. What do you make of Keldon Johnson, and what is his ceiling?
Keldon Johnson might be the most reckless player in the NBA. Just watching him try to steamroll people on drives, and it doesn't always work. Like I said, it's reckless. If he can hit threes with better consistency, and we kind of saw him do that last year, but in just smaller samples, he ends up having I don't know what the player like archetype ceiling would be, but he ends up having the ceiling, I would think, of, does he have the highest ceiling of their young wings? I think it's possible. I would still have Derek White there, not playing too well, but he is just still working his way back from injury. So I think you could safely say that he might be their best young prospect. At this point, I would say he has a higher ceiling than Murray, if you're going to tell me Keldon Johnson has a consistent three-point stroke. I remain super intrigued by Devin Vassell, though. That you mentioned they have so many wings, which I think is a good thing, but I look at White, Murray, Keldon Johnson, and Devin Vassell as like this legitimate four-player base who you technically can play all at the same time moving forward. And the Spurs have long had like a deficit of wings and or like these players with length who can play these multiple positions. And now they have, White and Murray aren't traditional wings, but you can move Murray around just because he's big for a guard and he's sort of long, and the way he defends is super physical and effective. So I like that four player core for them. But I do think, again, I don't know what the best outside player comp would be for Keldon Johnson, but there's a chance that I might like him better long term than any of the other guys that I just mentioned.
Interesting. What is ailing the Grizzlies?
Look, I mean, I still believe in their defense, even though it's been bad over this recent losing streak. Teams are shooting like 70% at the rim and 50% from three over their last four games. What I think they absolutely need is that second shot creator next to Ja Morant. And I don't think a healthy Jaren Jackson Jr. or even a Justice Winslow, should he play this season, I don't know if that ends up helping them. They need the idea of Dylan Brooks in better execution. And that's why I've said, if you can get Victor Oladipo for super cheap, that might be a good landing spot for him because he feels like the perfect fit next to Ja Morant right now. And if they get that type of player, They become dangerous immediately. But I do think their defense, when you look at the ball pressure they're able to put up, and even some of the looks they're able to limit around the rim, and Jonas Valanciunas, now that he's back in the fold, should help there. I buy into their defense staying top 10, top 7 all season, but their offense is going to be capped just because they need that second shot creator next to Ja Morant.
Yeah, I don't know. I think getting Jaren Jackson will be really helpful for them. I don't know. Like, I think one of the things that's going to be interesting about the Grizzlies with their picks and their future situation is that it is so hard to keep this many guys, this many young guys, on the same linear path. And Bane and Tillman and Jackson and Morant and Brooks and everybody else who's coming in. Like, it's just impossible. No team's done it before. Like, this is not something that you can do. One of these guys will fall off a cliff. You won't be able to pay all these guys, and you just got to figure out which ones to work and which one fits the best. Like, it's gonna be very fascinating to see the Grizzlies in the next 2 to 3 years and what they look like and who's still standing in this group.
Would you?
Yeah.
Something I've given thought to, and I don't know that I would endorse it, but would you build? And if he's, let's say he's willing to stay, if you get him to, do you like Bradley Beal in Memphis if it costs you Jaren Jackson Jr., let's say probably Xavier Tillman, maybe Desmond Bane, and then just other, you get to keep Brandon Clark and obviously Ja Morant, and you're giving future picks up in that deal. Do you like that type of a move? Because what you just described, which I agree with, is a team that's going to need to consolidate their assets at some point, because it's hard to keep, you know, growth one isn't linear. And so it's just hard to keep those players all on the same track in general. They're all going to need to get paid at some point. I mean, Justice, yep, Winslow, free agent in 2022, Jaren Jackson Jr. is extension eligible this summer. Ja Morant's going to be the summer after him, as will Brandon Clark. And so you're getting to a point where, yeah, we're thinking a year and 2 and 3 years down the line, but you have to, because these players are so young.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Beal, but I do think them going big fish hunting would be something I would do, because you know what you have in Morant. And Brandon Clark and Morant, I think, are probably the linchpins, and Jaren Jackson just being the huge question mark, and maybe you just want to sell high and you're kind of worried about the injury stuff and stuff, especially when you look at Kristaps and stuff. I don't know. I would just be more and more wary of the 7-footers like Jaren Jackson, but I do really like Jaren Jackson.
He's clearly healthy, would be their second best player, or if you just want to say the player with the second highest ceiling.
Yeah.
But I don't even know, is that ceiling that of a number two?
Always be
a
part
guy
of it. I don't know.
And you mentioned Kristaps. I think that's a good, you know, it's not a perfect comparison because Kristaps is a much better rim protector, but we're probably in a position where we need to have a conversation about, is KP a legitimate number two? And Jaren Jackson's of the same vein, where he's not going to give you, yeah, he spaces the floor like crazy, and his 3-point volume, that's absolutely huge and opens things up for everyone, but you still need that other shot creator, and mm-hmm. he's not that guy, and he's probably not going to anchor your defense at this point. I know he's still switchable and can be mobile, but he's not a rebounder, not this great rim protector. I don't think they've wanted to use him at the five when he's been healthy, so those are tough conversations to have. But Ja Morant is one, already so good, and two, Jaren Jackson Jr. is closer to his next contract, that those are conversations that you need to have.
Absolutely. The Rockets are starting to get injured and fall off. Do you think the tailspin's coming in Houston and we're going to start seeing some more pieces being consolidated and moved around?
Yeah, I mean, they've been bad over the past few games. They're just the shooting. Oof, I think PJ Tucker, like I said before, is at like -5% from three. Victor Oladipo has struggled there a lot, not even getting to the free throw line as much as he was in Indiana. Now he's dealing with a quad injury, which is always a red flag with him. The Christian Wood injury is absolutely crushing to what they're able to do on offense. Boogie hasn't looked great. I think John Wall's had some good games, but you also have to talk about the value proposition of, does it make sense to have him chuck 6-7 threes a game when he's only knocking them down at a 31% clip? If you can guarantee he's never going to take a long two again in his life, I would say it's worth it, but you can't guarantee that either. I think, you know, my guess is they probably want to keep DeShaun Tate, but there's no one on this roster who should be untouchable right now. And the names that I'm watching, there's PJ Tucker, there's Oladipo, and then I would see if teams start to come calling about Daniel House or DeShaun Tate himself, because Tate has been fantastic defensively, and he is, you know, they did find him, but he's on the older side. I think he's 25. So if you can get good value for him alone, or maybe he's part of just a bigger deal that ups your asset return, those are four guys that I think are going to generate a ton of interest for them. And I would be open to moving every single one of them if I was Houston.
Last thing, we'll wrap up here, Dan. the Denver Nuggets. They're struggling. They're fighting for their playoff lives out west. I'm weirdly excited for this. We talked about the Michael Porter stuff. We talked about what this could mean and like what some of the like the glaring issue they have at the wing spot, kind of like the Nugget or the Jazz in similar ways. But are you excited to see them play 500 basketball? Because the nervousness that Connolly and this front office will have to deal with for the next few months with Murray and the hot and coldness of his game and Jokic playing at an MVP level, like, I am very fascinated to see how much longer the Nuggets put up with this before they're like, we have to shake things up and admit that we made some mistakes this offseason.
As someone who roots for chaos, I'm definitely intrigued by that. And mm-hmm. I think you could say the same thing about Dallas. Is Denver and Dallas feel like the most impatient underachieving teams in the league. And one
Dallas
of them
is going to fuck around and trade for Victor Oladipo.
That does feel like the end game here. But what's also with Dallas is they have fewer intriguing assets, but it's also easier to be like, find a move that makes sense for them where it's, if you don't have to give up a ton for Victor Oladipo, that might be the guy that you need. Or is it, do we just need kind of a lower end guard who could create his own shot? Do we just want sort of another big so that who can switch, so that KP can be a four on offense, but be a five on defense or something? With Denver, it's like, what is the move here? Because Bradley Beal is not it. It's their defense that's an issue. And I don't know who becomes available that is worth them making the big swing. If you can do a minor move where it's, is it Will Barton for Aaron Gordon Jr. just straight up, basically? I don't know why I call him Aaron Gordon Jr., but is that like the move? Like, that would be somewhat tantalizing. But Denver does have the asset equity to do something huge. And maybe you've given more thought to this than I just don't know who is the player to go all in on for them, just because based off what they need, it's that 3-4 fringe star type on defense who provides offensive value. And I don't see that player out there right now.
OG Anunoby. I solved it. The beginning of this podcast, I solved it.
If you get the Knicks involved as a third team that's willing to take on extra cap space because of the discrepancy of what OG's contract is worth inbound and outbound salary-wise, I would dig it. Does Denver have the guts to – like, to me, they would have to give up more than – if I was Toronto, I don't know that I would do Porter for OG straight up. Like, I might want something else other than Porter just because of his injury history and knowing how much he's going to cost himself to extend. But that is, look, you make me
think some more chaos
time I come on this podcast, and that is probably the biggest brain bender you've ever thrown me.
Well, I got another one for you. Michael Porter Jr. for DeAndre Hunter.
Hunter's... I wouldn't do that if I was Denver. If there's other stuff involved,
Hunter, Kevin Herter too. You can have Kevin Herter.
That might be interesting then, because Hunter is defended like basically 1-4 this year when he's healthy, but now he's out for 4 to 6 weeks, and so that becomes
that's true. Him being hurt right now does change things, but that was something else I thought about. Like, get their own little above average Harrison Barnes, and then get another ball handler in Kevin Herter.
I mean, at this point, they could probably use Harrison Barnes. Like, that might just be a name in the circle. Do you know who they could really use? And I don't know if the Thunder would ever give him up. But like, can anyone pry Lu Dort out of OKC?
I mean, you should be able to. Like, the Thunder should not be like, we like Lu Dort. Like, you have 75 picks. Like, he's not in the plans. Like, you are not keeping Lu Dort around for this rebuild. He is not. You have exactly one player on this team right now who will be around for the rebuild, and that's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I don't know. I would like to see. And also, I'm getting more and more antsy about the Hawks. And I think leaning more into the let's just do the Nets thing and just score all the points and give up on defense.
They've been pretty good defensively this year, though. That's what's
no,
bizarre.
But I don't want it. I want to just lean all the way in. Let's just do that, because I think we're going to get to the end game with John Collins, too, where Collins and Capella is just not good together. It doesn't work. And there's going to be some still awkwardness with closing lineups and what this means for Reddish and Hunter's development. Like, have you seen the usage rates in Atlanta this year?
I have not checked them out in depth. No.
Trae Young has a 37% usage rate this year.
Yes, that one is knowable. I thought you were talking about the youngsters specifically.
Well, the youngsters are below 20%. Hunter and Reddish are both below 20%. I think they're at 18.
Reddish has been disappointing for me as someone who's been trying to help steer that.
He has no choice. Watch these games. Like, I don't like Reddish gets his little moments and his little spurts, but like, he doesn't have any opportunities. Like, there's no opportunity for anyone other than Trae to still do anything.
Yeah, I just don't know what is the – does Michael Porter Jr. make – I mean, they still do need that.
No, right. I just want them to fire for the ball. I think that's just all I want is I just want to see Michael Porter Jr. and Trae Young fight over the basketball every night.
I mean, then you have John Collins there too. Like, that gets
– Collins is gone. Like, there's no way. And once that came out with The Athletic about, like, him just not enjoying playing basketball with Trae Young, it was like, oh, yeah, this is over.
I think he's played well enough on defense this year that it might get a little bit more interesting than that. Otherwise, I would tend to agree with you.
But also, like, you can't close with John Collins and Capella. And Capella's been awesome. Love the Capella experience. Like, I've very much enjoyed Capella. But I don't know. I just – the same stuff, and this was my worry with Trae, was that – you can put in all the quality vets you want. Trae has been enabled to be James Harden, and Trae is going to not give up the reins just because you added more veterans. And I understand Bogdan's been hurt, and they still had Herter. They still had Hunter. They still had Reddish. They still have guys they can give opportunities to. They don't.
It's the same guys from last year, though, because of how hurt their free agent additions have been. Like, even Gallo's missed, I think, more than half this season or something like that.
He's actually number two in usage, too, at, like, 24%. But Gallo's been fine when he's healthy. It's just the opportunities are still not there. And I like, Lloyd Pierce is probably out. Like, I think this is probably it for Lloyd Pierce after this year, would be my guess. I don't think they're going to get above 500, and I think they're going to be around the play-in game and probably miss it.
If they don't make the playoffs, he's definitely gone. If they get into the playoffs, like if they're a six seed,
I don't think they're going to be a six seed. I think they're going to fall back because I think the Heat are coming. Because if you look at the East,
the Heat and the Raptors are coming for sure.
Yes, yeah. And I think that's going to end up hurting the Hawks. I think the Hawks are going to continue sliding down. The Hornets being better than expected also really hurts the Hawks. And the Hornets are just playing better basketball as a whole, but I don't know. I think this is going to continue to get worse and more awkward. And
do you have like a solution proposed though? Like, I'm assuming
what I would do.
Cheek.
I mean, the solution is take the ball out of Trae Young's hands and like be a coach and be like, hey, Trae, you're playing off the ball, and we're installing possessions where DeAndre Hunter is bringing the ball up and we're doing high pick and rolls with John Collins, and Trae stands in the corner and cuts and does stuff. Cam Reddish, here's some stuff for you. We're going to do some pin downs. Like, we're going to call some plays for you. Like, you have to go into this and say, Trae, this is not all about you anymore. If you want the team as a whole to get better and these lottery picks to get better that we traded up for and traded Luka Doncic for, you have to give up the ball. Like, he cannot have the ball. A 37 usage rate is preposterous with this group. It's preposterous. It's bad coaching.
I'm with you, but I'm also like, have we seen enough of the Hawks at full strength to say that? Because I don't know if it's his usage is coming at the expense of a Herter, Reddish, or DeAndre Hunter. Like, that's not going to make me angry.
I would just rather be bad and them get time and more development than them speeding up the process to play the exact same way they played last year. You see what I'm saying? Like, they added all these vets and the vets aren't healthy and all that kind of stuff, but like, I don't know, it's the same kind of basketball, just with Trae being better than he was a year ago. Trey's also still not a shooter, and Hawks Twitter losing their minds whenever he gets hot. When Trey's hot, it's so much fun. And like, when the Wolves game a couple weeks back, he was just bonkers and it was great and it's fun. Trey's still not a great shooter. He's an average shooter. Great passer, great at the rim, great foul drawer, but
his floaters seem like they're starting to go down. I mean, look, Trae Young's been shooting like 50% from three over his past 10 games, so yeah. I might push back on the shooting thing.
What was he before that? What is he, and what is his highest to this point in his career? Let's see, where is Trae Young right now? I guess it's more of like the Steph Curry stuff. Like, he's not an elite shooter. He's just not going to be an elite shooter in this league.
He's at 37% this season on the level of difficulty of attempts that he takes. I think that's a fairly big deal. If Stephen Curry is the bar, then yeah, he's absolutely not clearing it.
He's also not Lillard levels. Like, he's not, like, he's okay. He's league average.
Look, this is year three. Lillard wasn't like hitting the attempts that Trae Young is taking in year
What was Damian Lillard shooting in year three?
There's also you have to look at the shot quality that he's taking. Damian Lillard wasn't taking as many like 27 foot bombs off the dribble in year three. That just wasn't happening in Portland.
I'm not even going to pretend to remember a lot of 2015 Damian Lillard. He was shooting 34%, and then he went to 37 the year after.
So Trae Young is right on schedule then. There are concerns, I think, with the usage. You don't want him to be have an offensive monopoly like Harden did, because he's not. I think part of what made that possible is Harden was easier to hide on defense than Trae Young is. They also did a better job surrounding Harden with a co-star. I mean, we have to fault the Hawks here to an extent where it's like, have they given him – you can blame the coach, But, like, have they given him the player to displace him from the ball yet? I don't think that that player's on the roster.
You don't trade up for DeAndre Hunter. Like, you trade up for DeAndre Hunter is because you think he can be that.
I mean, that was a questionable move to begin with in that draft.
I'm not disagreeing, but that's what you do.
Right. I just don't. DeAndre Hunter's not that player, though. Isn't that
clear? You admit failure and you move on. Like,
look, I still think it's before any judgment's going to be passed on him, like, there needs to be a team dynamic that actually invites him to give up the ball. And I haven't seen that yet. And look, maybe the criticism will be more fair this season if Bogey's healthy and Gallo's healthy at the same time, because then, yeah, he's going to probably be on the court with at least one of them at all times, and he shouldn't be handling the ball as much. But right now, I don't see the incentive to move him off the ball, at least personally anyway.
Okay, okay. Dan Favalli, what can we check out from you this week on the internet?
It's ironic that we're talking about the Hawks free agency signings because I am regrading every team's 2020 free agency.
F for the Hawks, there you go.
So strictly free agency. Spoiler alert, the Hawks did not grade out well. So that's a project I've been working on that will drop soon.
All right, go check that out. Dan, thank you so much for the time. Co-worker Dan Favalli. I appreciate it. We'll be talking basketball more this season. Thank you as always, my friend, and stay safe out there.
You as well. Thanks for having me as always, Chase.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.